Support for this podcast and the following message come from KUST Campus Radio. A student-operated non-commercial radio station, KUST provides students and faculty of St. Thomas a platform dedicated to creative storytelling, diverse viewpoints, and exploring a vast array of audio content. Tune in at any time to KUST at mixer.com/KUST-radio. Welcome to Keep the Ball Rolling, presented by Tommy Media. On today's show, we talk about the anticlimactic game in Moorhead. Then we sit down with football coach Glenn Caruso, and finally wrap the show with a preview of the upcoming game against Augsburg next week. Hey everyone, and welcome to Keep the Ball Rolling. I'm Noah Brown, sitting alongside my co-host Brady Halbmeyer. Brady, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. It's a beautiful, beautiful day down here in the basement of OEC.
Yeah.
No windows.
We don't have to see the gross, disgusting 50-degree rainy weather that's going on.
Exactly, yeah. But no, I'm doing well. It's a good weekend.
Yeah, it was a pretty good weekend. Before we get into any sports-related stuff here, we had a slight personnel change due to managerial, advisorial decisions. I don't even know if those are words. They are.
Yeah.
TJ is no longer producer of Keep the Ball Rolling. So right now it's just a two-man team of Brady and myself, actively looking for another producer on staff. But
we are on the hunt for a new producer. TJ left some big shoes. We're sad to see him go.
Yeah.
It was out of our hands. So
yeah,
we'll move on and look for somebody else.
But we'll keep moving on to bigger and I don't know, better things. As my former roommate and one of my best friends, I can't rip on TJ too hard.
Yeah, he was a good producer. Yeah. TJ was real good for the short run we had. Yeah. But let's get some Tommy football talking here. Mm-hmm. Noah, you and a couple other Tommy Media members traveled up to Moorhead this weekend to watch the game. What was it like?
Going up to Concordia is always really fun. I mean, I'm just one for road trips, so the drive there and back didn't bother me. That was fun. But then the game itself was interesting. It was surprising. Based on my experience, this is my fifth semester in Tommy Media, third covering football. 2 years ago was the 23-21 walk-off win when Alex Fenske threw the pass to Nick Waldvogel with 2 seconds remaining. And then last year was a 21-0 shutout, but it was a well-fought defensive battle.
Yeah.
This season, however, the team was up 36-0 at halftime. It just felt completely different, where everybody was expecting this to be the game mm-hmm. that really kind of started the Tommies' tough season.
Yeah.
And once again, it was another blowout. It was the fewest points the Tommies have scored all season, but they still scored 46 points. And only allowed one touchdown. It was 46-7. That didn't come till midway through the fourth quarter. It was just bizarre where you're going in and you're expecting a team to really put up a fight, and the Tommies impose their will again on another team who is supposed to be good. I don't know if that's more just how good this Tommy team is, mm-hmm. how well they're playing together, or if that really is a signal that there's a growing disparity in the MIAC where there are more teams who are significantly worse than the top teams.
It definitely appears that there's, you know, St. Thomas is kind of breaking off in the top of the MIAC is kind of breaking off from the bottom. And 36-0 against probably the third best team in the MIAC, maybe the fourth best team if you put Bethel mm-hmm. above Concordia Moorhead. But 36-0 at halftime, I told Caruso when we interviewed him, it was a non-competitive game. And I think that really does speak to how good this Tommy team is. We'll see how they can do against the top five, you know, in the D3 football, like when it comes to playoffs. St. John's is ranked number 9th, so that should be a good game. Hopefully that's not a blowout. But I think it really does speak to the disparity between these teams here and how mm-hmm. much St. Thomas is continually breaking away. It was 21-0 last year. It was 36-0 at halftime. It was 46-7 final score this year. St. Thomas grew again this year, and they're getting better and better as the years
and
go on.
I don't want to take everything away from the Tommies by saying this was just the MIAC being the MIAC again, where they played really well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Josh Parks, this was his first game with 3 rushing touchdowns. He had one run for his first score. It was 38 yards. that was probably the best run I've seen from him all season long. I mean, it hit the hole right out of the offensive line beautifully. Shook a couple tackles. It was a good run. Jacques Perra was looking real good in the pocket. Completed over 70% of his throws. This offense is playing really well, and the defense is just once again, it's a Caruso defense where it's one of the best in the nation, the best in the nation right now. So I don't want to take away from the Tommy team, but
not at all. I mean, they're a good football team,
and
who's getting
better. They
deserve
these wins, but it's just, it would be nice if, and this is just coming from a reporter standpoint, mm-hmm. I don't want to be standing out there for 3 hours, you know, freezing my butt off, watching the Tommies just down another opponent like that.
Yeah,
I like weather games, but I like it when they're close and when there's some excitement.
Yeah,
this was not an exciting game.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're solely speaking from a fan reporter, you know, side of things that we want entertaining games, but yeah. I mean, for the football team, for Coach Caruso, you can't be more pleased than how he is.
No.
This team is really, really good. They're getting better every year. This program is getting better every year. They're separating themselves from the rest of the MIAC. All the props and the credit to the coach and the team.
Right. Speaking of coach, we sat down with Coach Glenn Caruso to talk about some of the disparity in the MIAC and a few other things, about 20, 25 minutes. So here it is. So we're joined today in studio by head football coach Glenn Caruso. Coach, thanks for being in.
Happy to be here. You've had a couple of our guys on, our current guys and our alumni, and sounds like it's going pretty well.
Yeah, it's been a good season so far. Right after the game against Concordia last Saturday, you mentioned that two seasons ago, that was kind of one of the worst wins you'd been a part of, or you felt the most dejected after a win. How heavily do those kinds of games like that, the Concordia game 2 years ago, the loss against Oshkosh 2 years ago, the loss against Mary Hardin-Baylor last season, how heavily do those weigh on you?
Quite a bit. And, you know, when they weigh on us, we're able to utilize those for positive things. So just to clarify, what I said, and I still stand by it, it's the most dejected I felt after
right.
a win. It's not the worst win we've ever had.
It's
a good win.
Right.
But the manner in which you had to go to win that game, you know, we should have been able to win that several other ways. So those are great motivating factors. And even if it's 2 years removed, in a scenario like this where we have enough guys who are juniors and seniors who remember being on that trip and in that game, and now you go back to that place 2 years later, I get it. We played them to 21-0 shutout last year at homecoming. But to go back there, you know it's going to evoke those memories, and we were able to utilize those for good.
Right.
Coach, Concordia is probably considered the third best team in the MIAC behind you guys in St. John's. Do you ever get, you know, with the blowout win this weekend, it was 36-0 at halftime. It was a non-competitive game. Do you ever get the feeling that...
Spoken like someone who wasn't coaching in the game.
Right. Well, yeah, from a fan perspective.
I know what you're saying.
Do you ever get the feeling that maybe your team is outgrowing the MIAC?
No, this league is amazing. And I also think in those conversations, Bethel is a team that is playing very, very well. The top half of our league is as good as it's ever been, ever, in 100 years of this league. And that includes some other teams like St. Olaf right now being 5-0. Bethel's undefeated. But no, I don't feel at all like that. This league prepares us well. And it is as gritty and scrappy a league, and we're very fortunate that we have a lot of good teams in it, a lot.
Mm-hmm. And so there are some people over the past few seasons who have been not necessarily complaining, but have been talking about kind of the disparity in the MIAC. So right now, as you mentioned, there are four teams who are currently undefeated in MIAC play. It's mm-hmm. you, or St. Thomas, St. John's, St. Olaf, and Bethel. There are four teams who are currently winless in the MIAC: Gustavus, Augsburg, Carleton, and Hamlin. Do you think that disparity is a problem where there are, you know, three or four really good teams every season and three, four not really good teams every season?
You know, I think that's probably something to better answer after all of the games have been played, because mm-hmm. sometimes when schedules fall the way they do, you get this. I mean, there were years I remember where Augsburg and Gustavus started out undefeated and, you know, early in the year. And that's something that we should probably revisit towards the end of the season or after the season once we get all the data points. Mm-hmm. But I do know, like I said, the high end of the league, the top half of the league is playing with any top half of any league right now, and it's fun to watch.
Is there any concern? I know that there's kind of like an old saying that maybe a team that isn't tested or hasn't, you know, I don't want to say hasn't gone through adversity, but do you ever get concerned that your team maybe doesn't play in any close games until the playoffs? Or, I mean, besides Tommy Johnny, your team's not probably not going to play a close game.
No, I mean, I think that's the worst question I've been asked this fall, to be frank with you. I think that there are tremendously competitive games. Just because you play well doesn't mean it's not a close game. Just because you play well doesn't mean it's not competitive. And I will tell you factually, having done this 23 years, that our league is competitive.
You mentioned before trying to get maybe some, all right, we talked about it on the first episode that unfortunately didn't air, about possibly getting D2 opponents in non-conference play. Is that something you would encourage, you would welcome, that you'd want to do?
We wouldn't be averse to it. I mean, it's not the intent, but as I was answering that question back then, it was all on the heels of us playing Trinity, who is a scholarship team. And what I said was, I think it's really important that if we get a chance, we can play 10 games. I'd much rather play 10 games with all the teams in Division III because that's the ethos of our university. But if we can't find a 10th game, that's when we branched out to the scholarship schools and the NAIA. And it is a nice opportunity to play a school that has athletic scholarships for reasons of recruiting or for reasons of testing us in certain ways. But no, we're very, very happy with when we can schedule good Division III opponents.
We've talked about it before. You said you've had a hard time scheduling, you know, good non-conference D3 teams to play. You know, what's that been like?
Well, and we're pretty, you know, since the last time where the show that we did not air because of the technical difficulties, we found out that Benedictine, because that's what started the conversation. Mm-hmm. Benedictine is a team that we'll be playing in 2000 and, let me think about this, 20 and 21.
Okay.
Good Division III team, playoff team out of the Chicago area. And at that point, when we had scheduled it, they were wholeheartedly in Division III and in their league. And they ended up choosing to try and look at going the Division II path. And we thought that that was going to be what happened. And then just last week, at the beginning of last week, we got word that they're in fact going to stay Division III, which I think is very appropriate for them. And I'm very happy because it allows us to play our schedule with, you know, Division III, good Division III teams, and hopefully teams that are going to be fighting for playoff spots year in and year out.
Could you ever see St. Thomas moving up in divisions?
No, I mean, we're a Division III football team, and I'm very happy that we are.
Okay, I want to ask you one thing about Nick Saban. Okay. A couple weeks ago, he was asked after his team beat Texas A&M pretty handily. He was asked, or he told the media, rather, he wants him to start writing some bad things about his team so he can be like, hey, guys, look, here, we can work on this. Do you ever get that feeling with your team?
No, but I mean, I'm not Nick Saban. So we don't have the media coverage exactly as he does. But not really. I'm surprised he would have said that because I know he's very big on the process, as we are as well.
He said it a couple times in years past that he wants like negative. He wants the media to create adversity for him. And he tries to use that, but I mean, it's different. You're right; you don't have the media coverage.
But even so, the reason why I maybe be a little surprised that he mentioned it is because he does such a tremendous job of recruiting guys that are going to focus on those things that they need to do to get better, and then once they get there, creating a culture where it's less about the team they're playing that given week and more about can they grow and can they get better. So I think regardless of, maybe he was being a little tongue-in-cheek with that, but regardless of what the media chooses to write about Alabama or not write about Alabama, I'm pretty sure Coach Saban does a good job getting them focused.
Yeah. And your team has done incredible the past few seasons, and right now the defense is off to scoring-wise the best start in your tenure. They've only allowed 2 touchdowns so far in the first 4 weeks, leading Division III in points per game and total yards per game. Offenses firing on all cylinders. Are you finding it difficult to find things to work on or really get the guys to think they need to work on?
No, not at all. And case in point would be, you know, we came away from Saturday saying that was I'm not going to say it's the best defensive performance, but that is a phenomenal defensive effort versus a very good football team. That challenges you not just in terms of their culture and their toughness, but also their schematics. And the point is we were able to get our guys understanding that we needed to play a certain way, even though we had come off of 2 straight shutouts. So fairly irrelevant at what the scoreboard says, more so with you can watch film. If you've been doing this as long as we have, Coach K, Coach Walsh, our defensive staff, you can watch film. and know what you have to work on. Just because a tackle is made for a loss or a sack is made or we force a fumble doesn't mean that the other 7, 8, 9, 10 guys are exactly in the right spot or in the right spot at the right time. So plenty that we can work on.
How much do you think your play call is affected by the defense, knowing that you have a defense that is so good and so talented? How does that affect your play calling?
Now, that's one of the best questions I've ever It is. It affects it greatly. And what we hope to do is not sway greatly one way or the other, game in and game out. But when you have a product, and it goes both ways. Special teams flow sequentially off of offense and defense. Defense flows sequentially off offense and vice versa. So there is definitely a conscious thought during the week as you prepare of what you can and what you should not do. Now, a lot of that changes throughout the game, and that's something that I think we've gotten as a staff much better at, specifically the last 3 or 4 years, is understanding the situations of the game and being intuitive to adjust 4 or 5 times, not always that many, but there's always several risk aversion adjustments that have to be made throughout the game, and those will stay for a period of time until dynamics change. Score, field position, how we're playing versus them, time left in the game, and I think we do a pretty good job with that.
And do you give Coach K is he have like ultimate reign over the defense?
Oh,
you don't affect his play calling or anything?
I wouldn't say that. I mean, I don't know any head coach that doesn't affect a coordinator's play call.
But you're
call.
Not running up to him on third down and saying, hey, run this.
No, Coach K is eminently qualified to dial up the stuff that we need to. And here's what's really neat is you look at Coach Kaczynski, Coach Walsh, myself. We've been together now 11, 12, 13 years. And there is a growth that occurs with that. I would liken it to your brothers and sisters, if you have brothers and sisters. And it's different when you interact with someone who you met for the first time at school and when you've grown up with that person. And you kind of know which way they're going to lend their sitting themselves to or lean one way or the other. And it allows you to be a lot much more efficient because not everything has to be verbally said in order for us to know what we should do, because those scenarios we played, probably 130 games or so, somewhere in that neighborhood, 125 games. And we kind of know the scenarios and the situations, some of which we've won, some of which we've lost, to go back to your earlier question. But all of those situations are ones that we can draw from.
Cool. Do you all have certain plays or certain formations that you know you want to run in no matter what in any given game? I think sometimes, different teams will script different plays to start off a game. Do you have those scripts that you go into every week with?
Well, there's two different questions. Do we have the scripts that we go into? Yes. Mm-hmm. Do we have specific things that we feel we have to see in every game? No. Mm-hmm. So each game and each opponent will present a different challenge, and trying to get the information that we need to presents in different ways. But for the most part, I would say there are generally week in and week out about 15 plays or things that we'll want to see sometime in the first half. And sometimes there are things, even though we think we prepare really, really well, there are things that just pop up. And that's something that is increasingly difficult to guard against is we will, in 8 games a year, we will see something that is totally different than what we expected. It's going to be a complete surprise. And we've got to figure it out in short fashion.
Right. And so kind of going back to, we asked you about this during the first episode, but is there a certain play or a couple of plays that you know that no matter what the defense brings at you, I used the example of the Dallas Cowboys a couple seasons ago with the dive play.
Run you were mentioning.
Do you have that certain play where even if the defense reads it from a mile away, you can run it and run it so well that no matter what they do, they won't be able to stop it?
I mean, we hope. I would say we have certain plays that we feel the most confident about, and teams stop it. I mean, they do, right? But there is a point in time where a belief in a play outweighs the statistical advantage that the leverage might give you. And yeah, we certainly have play. I think every coach has those types of plays. I just hope that we make our decisions on what those plays are based on the talent that we have that given year and on actual numbers, not just based on things in my mind, because a lot of times coaches, they want to try and have success with the things that they like. That's just human nature. And sometimes those things that we like are not what we're best at. So we have to be continually recalculating those.
Coach, we have a couple minutes left with you. I want to touch quickly on Jordan Roberts, former player of the year 2015.
Yep.
Goes into his, was it fifth or sixth year
last
year, and has, you know, a difficult season. How hard was it to see him finish this year like that?
It's tough. And as we touched on briefly, it was great to be able to see him play in senior day last year. That was a neat moment. But it's always difficult when someone, when someone's career is starting to come to a close or actually finishes, whether that is in his freshman year, his fourth year, or his fifth year, whatever it might be. And especially when you have someone who, I mean, Jordan is a guy who he was like a lightning rod for everybody's attention for a lot of reasons, not the least of which was the fact that he was a great player who's a great person. And I feel that way about every player that graduates all the way through for me. It just so happens that Jordan's was tough because he came off a 30-35 touchdown season, and then he had the injury, and it was unfortunate, but he's still an integral part of this program.
You mentioned last time that he's working with the Seattle Seahawks.
Correct.
Now, can you tell us what he's doing?
Yeah, I don't know the exact title, but it's in pro player personnel. It's a scouting type personnel spot. Not dissimilar to what Willie Schneider had. So Willie was a fullback for us, a Creighton-Durham Hall kid, played fullback, was on the 2012 National Championship game team. And he's the one that, I wouldn't say helped hire him, but he was his mentor within our football program throughout it. And similar to what he was doing. So it's kind of a neat deal.
Yeah, very cool.
And so you said that Jordan's injuries were one of the main reasons that his career stopped. And head injuries in football and any other contact sports are a given. And we talked about this a little bit on the previous episode, but you've got children now who are start around the age where contact sports become more prevalent. They get more competitive.
Yep.
Are you inclined to let your children play those sports, even with the risks of head injuries?
No question. No question at all. There is a value to the education that you get from an athletic experience. And I believe personally, obviously I'm biased, but I think the educational value of football is one that is as good as it gets. And, you know, I can sit here, my wife and I can bubble wrap our kids and never allow them to do anything. And my dad used to say, I can do that, but then what type of life are you going to be living? And there's acceptable risks with everything. But I think the reason why it's a big conversation right now is because people are not recognizing the value. I played the sport. I played it since I was 9 years old. I can tell you I had many, many, many injuries, many injuries. But at the end of the day, football has given me far more exponentially than it ever took away with an injury. And that's the reason why we feel good and we sleep well at night knowing that our kids are going to play. And case in point, Cade broke his leg, you know, a month or 2 months ago, I guess it is now. And that's part of the game. We don't wish it upon ourselves, but we're going to deal with it. And there is an education in that and how you deal with adversity too, that people are not valuing at high enough a level.
And so football in particular, the so much brain injury at the professional level. We have a lot of people doing research into the CTE and the brain injuries. Do you think there are ways to make the game safer without minimizing the entertainment and the actual playing value of football?
Yes, I do. I think that there's a lot in that question. I think that they have already done a good job of recognizing it. And you're never going to be able to take the upper body completely out of the game. Sometimes in doing so, what we're doing is trading out one injury for another. So case in point, if you absolutely can't go anywhere above the guy's shoulder pads or be even in a situation where a mistake might happen in that scenario, you might be hitting guys lower, and so you might see more lower extremity injuries instead of upper extremity injuries. But I do think, I mean, one thing that the NFL has done a great job of, and there's a lot of trickle down. Not everything is exactly, but the NFL is very good at knowing what the product that it has and trying to find ways to protect that, those players and the product of the game in general. And so certainly you've seen a lot of rule changes go into effect. And just since we've talked last time, you know, I think this has really blown up with the body weights, full body weight, partial body weight, players saying, what do you want me to do, be Keanu Reeves in the Matrix in midair and all that kind of stuff. But there is a point where I'm sure it changes the game to a spot where you can't quite recognize it. And I think that's where you start to see the NFL say, okay, let's revisit this. What does this look like? I would just much rather, think about those things before all the rule changes are made. But that's, you know, you got to get data points one way or another.
Right. Coach, we're past our time limit here. You got another meeting to get to. So we thank you for your time. We wish you good luck for the rest of the season.
Well, thanks. You guys do a great job. Keep it up.
Thank you.
And that was Coach Glenn Caruso with the football team. And Brady, you asked him both the worst and the best question he's ever been asked.
I thought it was a pretty good question. I mean, I asked him a question that his team doesn't really play in close games. They blow everybody out. When they get into a close game against, they play maybe one close game a year against St. John's. And then a couple years ago, they played a close game against Moorhead. Other than that, they don't play a close game until late November in the playoffs, second, third, fourth round of the playoffs. And it was a legitimate question. Do you think your team by that time is prepared to play in close games, considering they've played one close game up until that point? And he was like, that's the worst question I've ever been asked.
I don't know. From where he's coming from, he's a coach.
And yeah.
He'll find value in every single game that they play. But if you look at the last two seasons in the quarterfinals, two seasons ago against Wisconsin Oshkosh and last season against Mary Hardin Baylor, those were close games, both mistake riddled games, particularly the one against Oshkosh. 8 turnovers in the game and still lost by a field goal. That one, I think, you can attribute more to just, as a coach, there's nothing you can do when you have 5 interceptions, 3 fumbles. There's that. But Mary Hardin Baylor last year, that was a game where the defense in particular was playing extremely well.
Against, as they had all season.
Against the top offense in all of Division III. Mary Hardin Baylor was a powerhouse, and they held them to 10 points. But it was the punt return for a touchdown and the pick six that really. And so when you're not in close games and you don't have the opportunity to try and work your way back from those kinds of mistakes early in the season, during the regular season, when the season is on the line against some of the best teams in the nation, you don't have experience. And I think having that kind of experience is invaluable.
Yeah, and exactly what I was getting at. I mean, they're not used to playing from behind. He adamantly defended this team and said they are prepared, and for the most part, they look it. I understand where he's coming from, you said,
and I think
they're not used to playing from behind.
Yeah, and I think the season could be different, say, if we face Mary Hardin Baylor again, or we face Mountain Union, or whoever we face. It'll probably be right around the quarterfinals that we start getting those really good teams. Mm-hmm. This is all assuming that we do make the playoffs.
Right.
But I think if you look, the defense playing as well, if not better, than they did last season. I mean, through the first 4 weeks, they've allowed 2 touchdowns, leading the entire NCAA Division III in yards per game and points per game allowed. The offense is playing much better. Josh Parks had his second consecutive multi-touchdown game. Mm-hmm. Jock Parra looks much more comfortable this season than he did last season. And so even though they won't have the close games, this starting unit and the skill position players, particularly Parra and Parks, this is their second year starting. They've got an entire season's experience under their belt. So I think by the time postseason rolls around, even though you don't have any close games this season, that close game against Mary Hardin Baylor, Tommy Johnny last season, Tommy Johnny this season, presumably.
Yeah.
I think that would be good enough experience to hopefully carry them past a game like Mary Hardin Baylor last season.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. I don't know. I mean, this is a team that has struggled getting, after they play a couple good playoff teams, they've struggled to win that next one. They've got to the national championship 2 times in this Caruso era, and they haven't been able to win a national championship yet. We'll see if this is the year and if they have enough experience and they have enough competition to get them ready for the playoffs.
Still can't get over that. That was the worst question he's heard.
You
got to think that he's gotten a couple other dumb questions at some point.
And the best question he's ever heard is I asked it a few questions later, like, how does your defense being so good affect the play calling? That's a pretty generic question, and obviously having the best defense in Division III football is going to, like, you can call whatever you want, basically. Yeah.
I think by best and worst, he meant favorite and least favorite.
Exactly. That's probably
it's not on the quality of your question, Brady. You ask good questions.
I appreciate it.
All right. Well, that's all the time we've got for you here today on KTBR Keep the Ball Rolling with Brady Halbmeier and special guest Coach Russo. I'm Noel Brown. Thank you, and we'll see you next week.